that's how we're going to do it in style. Now I know.
Was that the eclipse?
That was the eclipse.
Oh, we missed it.
We missed it.
Ya pasó.
Ya pasó. Qué pena.
Yeah, qué pena. Well, how was it?
The eclipse was really good. We're going to see it next week, right?
Have your beverage, right?
Yes.
So we're starting to watch the weather to see if our eclipse watch party is going to be rained out. So it's a battle between the sun, the moon, and the clouds.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Mm-hmm. But Tobias told me, yeah, it's going to be fine.
So. Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
He must have a higher source.
Pull some strings.
Yeah, but it's exciting. It's
that.
Coming. It's going to be an amazing event. And the only person that is as excited is Joseph.
No more jokes.
And
huh?
He is.
He is. Just, yeah.
He's a joker.
Joe.
Get it? All right. Well, I was inspired by this project Tobias told about, the idea of being able to connect those tunnels and the fortitude and determination it took. One of the greatest secrets in doing anything of real importance in life is having the willingness to stick to it and not get discouraged just because every other day it seems impossible. And I think that's a very important attribute. It's one of the things you can learn by being very diligent in learning your classes. When I took college calculus, I seemed like I was in way over my head for a while. And one day it got so bad that I said, I quit.
Yeah.
I can't do this. This is hard. And so I went home and I was living with my parents. And my dad was home and I says, well, I've decided to quit college. He says, what's the matter? And I said, calculus. I can't learn calculus. I was a freshman, I was just starting out. I can't learn calculus. It's not like anything I've ever learned before. And my father said, you know what? I've seen you push through things harder than this before. Mm-mm. And I didn't quit, and I'm glad. It took some work. Learning takes work, but perseverance brings a price. And I think that's a very neat thing. I was very excited about what Johnny told us. What kind of diamonds are those again?
Super.
Dr. John diamonds?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. I'm going to get one of those. But you know, in college, I had the opportunity of making diamonds. Mm-hmm. And I worked for Dr. Tracy Hall, the man that made the very first man-made diamond. And he did that back at General Electric a long time before he was at the university. And I got a job running his big diamond presses in his laboratory. So we'd put samples of carbon, and then we had these big hydraulic anvils that would mash them at very, very high pressures and would run a large current through a heating coil. It was a graphite tube, and heat it to the temperature, and we were already at the pressure we needed to make diamonds, and then we'd quench it, open it up, tear it apart, and find the diamonds. It was kind of a neat thing. I would love to make one of those first diamonds. And while you were showing that, I was thinking about the machine that might be able to do that. When Dr. Hall made the first man-made diamond, a lot of people were trying, and no one has succeeded. And you know, if you take a hydraulic jack that you used to lift up a car or a truck, he took two of those and pushed them towards each other and pumped them up at high pressure to get the pressure he needed to make the first diamond. But as the pressure would get high enough, the material that was the sample holder, which was a solid, would start to act like a liquid and go squirting out between the two jacks. And that was the reason that the experiment kept failing. And so Dr. Hall made an invention, and it was a ring. It was a piece of metal that would fit around the sample like a ring so that it couldn't spray out. It would hold the pressure, and that's how he made the first man-made diamond. Then he left General Electric a few years later and came to the university where he was continuing to do his research. He had a lot more ideas he wanted to do. And he started building a machine to conduct those experiments. And GE told him, no, you can't, because that design is patented and we own the patent. And he said, but it was my idea, it was my patent. He said, we bought it, we own it. And so he could not use his ring, which was the only way anyone had figured out how to make a diamond. So instead, he used four jacks, and he made a little thing like a pyramid in the shape of a tetrahedron. And he pushed against those, and with the four anvils, he got more pressure, and he was able to do a lot of things. You have to persevere. He got a new patent, which was a lot more valuable than the old one.
About how old was he? Some students want to know that.
How old was he?
About.
When he was born?
Yeah, when he was born.
He was, when I knew him, he was probably 55. Mm-hmm. He went on to form a company called Mega Diamond that has developed the diamond drilling tips that made all of our fracking and things possible. He's amazing guy. He's passed away now, but an amazing scientist. And his amazing son, David Hall, carries on his tradition and is doing wonderful things. Well, I'd like to share with you a story, if it would be okay, just this once. This is a little bit off color story. But
just this once.
So if that bothers you, please don't listen. James, hold your ears. But the story, I think, makes a point about knowing what you're doing sure makes a difference. And you say, what kind of story is he going to tell to make that point? Well, not what you expect. Okay?
Okay, the best
So
time.
When I was 12, I had the opportunity to go to scout camp. And my family adopted another 12-year-old boy. It was my age, and we kind of grew up together like brothers. And so we went to scout camp together, but we didn't have a troop. We went alone, so we were in the provisional troop, which meant we had one guy there that watched like 100 boys.
Oh.
And we took with us a big box of food. We call it the grub box. And we took it in our tent, we set it up. My parents dropped us off, they took off. And so we started having our great week of camp. Well, about halfway through the week, we ran out of food.
That's a sad story.
This gets worse.
Oh.
This gets worse. We ran out of food. We had nothing to eat, and we're starting to starve, and we saw the other campers eating. And we'd open our box, and there was nothing to eat. And we were starving, and it was really, really tough. And the cell phones were down. And so on Friday, the parents would come up to camp for the family Friday night campfire. And when my parents came up, I told my mother, we're starving to death. We haven't really had anything to eat for 2 days. What happened? I said, well, we ran out of food. She says, there was plenty of food. No, we ran out. And so she went in our tent and opened it. And sure enough, we were out of food. All that was left was the carrots, the potatoes, the stuff you had to know how to cook. All the chips and the cookies and all the food was gone. So sometimes having a little bit of knowledge is really pretty valuable. But I had a wonderful experience at camp. I loved it. And I decided I would like to come back to camp, only I want to stay longer than a week. So when I turned 14, I applied to be a junior officer. That meant you got to come up for 2 weeks as a volunteer to help other campers. And I did that for 2 years, and I loved it. And I said, I need more of this. So there was a position for the craft store manager that got to stay 10 weeks and even got paid. And I said, at 16, I'm going to be the store manager. So I went to the scout office and I filled out the application, and the chief executive interviewed me for this position as Camp Maple Dell store manager. And he said, so what experience do you have running a store? I shined shoes when I was younger. And he said, well, have you ever worked at a store? No. Do you have any experience at all? Running a cash register, anything like that? Not really. I had a paper out. And he says, I'm sorry, we need someone with some experience. You know, why don't you go get some experience and then come back and maybe down the road you can do this. And I came walking away from that scout office so disappointed because I wanted it really, really bad. Went home, told my parents, well, said I didn't have enough experience. Got on my bicycle, rode down to the grocery store. Said, hi, I need a job working at this store. Well, I'm sorry, we don't hire them besides you're too young. Yeah, but let me finish. Did you know that I work here for no pay? For no pay? Yes, I am working for experience. They said, well, we don't do that. They said, just this once. So I'm asking, just this once. So they let me start stocking things on the shelves, and I did it for a couple weeks. And then the end of the second week, I said, you know what? You know what my dream job is? I would love to run that cash register. Well, we don't know about that. Just for an hour. And the cashier, she can be right there with me and watch me, make sure I don't do anything wrong. Well, okay, for 1 hour. May I help you, please? Okay, sure. And I ran the cash register for an hour. Thank you. The next Monday, I was back at the scout office. I'm now experienced. And he said, what did you do? I worked at a grocery store. Well, what'd you do? I ran the cash register. I did everything. And he kind of chuckled at me. And he chuckled and he shook his head. He says, okay, you got the job. And I was just thrilled. A whole summer at scout camp, this is going to be just the most amazing thing. Can I show him a picture?
It's your program.
Yeah, but you're in charge, right?
Yeah, show them the picture.
Okay, I'd like to show you a picture of the scout camp where I went. It's called Camp Maple Dell.
Fun.
That lake has more fish in it than it has water. Oh. Every Monday they plant more fish in there so the scouts can just pull them out, little rainbow trout. And their canoes, we learn how to gunnel jump. That's where you pedal the canoe by standing up on the rungs and going up and down, and you go down and shoot. So it's fun. I love camp. Well, anyway, so I was running the store, and that kind of made me like a big shot, which I was really good at being a big shot. And so on Monday night, they have a big campfire for the whole camp. Camp Maple Dell, back then, had 200 Boy Scouts at a time. So this big, giant campfire. They build a fire, and all of the scouts gather around. And you have a big mob like this, and different big shots like me were asked to be part of the ceremony. So I was asked to tell a story. And so I told a story which went something like this. Now remember, it's dark, there's this campfire burning, these boys are there, they're not paying attention at first. A long time ago.
Your voice was probably a little higher back then, wasn't it?
A long time ago. All right, let's back
let's
off.
Let's get real.
You have to get their attention first.
You do.
When you're doing your science fair project, you have something to tell the people to get their attention. Then you can get into the heavy science, right?
Right.
So I had a thing I would tell them first. I said, you know what? A long time ago, there was an old sheep herder that came up in this part of the country and camped out taking care of his sheep. And one day, he was out looking for his sheep, and this mountain lion saw him. And he thought, oh my goodness, a mountain lion. And he wasn't armed. He didn't have a gun, didn't have a knife. What am I going to do? And he didn't have to think very long because pretty soon that mountain lion started running at him. That old sheep herd turned around and ran down that trail as fast as he could go. But he could hear the mountain lion was faster. It was getting closer and closer and closer. And he realized, oh boy, I've got a real problem. But then he got an idea. He saw one of those old wood barrels. And he ran over and he jumped in the barrel and he turned it up on top of him to protect him. And that crazy mountain lion came running down and jumped on top of the barrel. Yeah. And stayed right there. The guy listened and listened. I wonder if he's left. I wonder if he's left. And he finally pushed the little cork, you know, they have in those out. So he's got a little peek hole. And he looked out the hole and he could see that mountain lion's tail going back and forth, waiting for him. I think that mountain lion was hungry. And this old sheepherder thought, boy, that mountain lion was hungry. And he just kept going back and forth. And he said, you know, I got to get out of here. I've been in here too long. I'm going to run out of air. And then he made a brilliant R-51 type invention. He says, I know exactly what I can do, but I'm going to have to time this perfect. So he took a deep breath, he counted to three, he stuck his arm out through the hole and grabbed the mountain lion's tail, pulled it inside the barrel and tied a knot in it. And then he tipped the barrel over and he took off running, he turned around to look, and here came that mountain lion running after him, the barrel bouncing along behind him. But now with the barrel, he had to get out of there. This is getting dangerous. And then he got an idea. There were two trees like this. He ran right between them. The mountain lion ran right between them. The barrel got caught. And he couldn't get through. And so the guy got away, safe and sound.
That's the wrong guy.
Yeah. It's a pretty good story, isn't it?
Pretty good story. Yeah.
So you should be in the inventive mode at all times. Could save your life. Okay?
Okay.
Well, it turns out that sometime later, the next year, he came back up there and he thought, I wonder what happened to that crazy mountain. I'll bet he's still stuck between those two funny trees and he's so proud of himself. So he went up there to see. There were the trees, but there was no mountain lion and there was no barrel. I wonder what happened to him. So he hiked on up the hill and up there on the ridge, you heard a growl, and you looked up, and there was the mountain lion. And he still had the barrel attached to his tail. And next to him, there were three little mountain lions, and they had little barrels on their tails.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, now I've got their attention.
Yeah.
Now we're ready to get real serious. So I said, did you know that that old sheep herder, one night, made a terrible mistake that he regretted for the rest of his time. Before that day, every night before he would go bed, he would go out and chop firewood and stack it up so he had plenty of nice firewood. He'd go in his little cabin, build a fire, and then he'd get some rest. But this one night, he was so tired, he got in the cabin. We don't have any wood. Well, I'll be okay. And he fell asleep. A big storm came in, a blizzard with snow, and it was freezing cold, and the wind was coming in through the cracks in the cabin, and he realized, this is dangerous. I've got to go get some firewood. So he got dressed, and he went out in the blinding blizzard to get some wood. He had a companion. He said, no, you wait here, I'll get it. His companion waited in the cabin. The old sheep herder went out into the night to find firewood. And he was never seen again. So the moral of the story that you scouts need to learn is you need to be prepared. You need to make sure you always have firewood and the things that you need. And they're prepared and they're stored there. That's something you all need to learn. That was my part of the campfire.
That's a good part.
Yeah, I told that every week.
It's a really good
part. Got better every week too. So then, the next night, Tuesday night, we took the scouts on a night hike.
Night hike.
Yeah. A night hike was when they'd take their sleeping bags and a little snack, and we're going to go hiking up in the mountain. And they had to put their flashlights away because they're going to learn how you can walk at night by using your peripheral vision. Remember, we found out that if you don't look straight at the trail, if you kind of look up out of the corner of your eye, you can see better in the dark. So we'd hike in the dark, we taught them how. And we went hiking up the trail over a hill to a place called Pine Forest. Pine Forest was this forest of beautiful pine trees. I think I got a picture of it here. Yeah, there it is. That is an actual picture of the Pine Forest where we took the boys hiking at night. Now, I have to stop here for just a minute. See, I was there all summer so I could get things all figured out. And I didn't stay in a tent. I had a little cabin, had electricity. We had a ham radio operator. And I also had a little AM radio transmitter. So with that transmitter, I could turn on music, and I'd take a little radio, and I'd hear my music all over camp, which is pretty neat. But I got this idea. And so Monday afternoon, one of the junior officers and I took four of the radios up to Pine Forest. And we climbed up and put them up in trees on four sides of where the boys were going to sleep. Yeah. And we tuned them into my little radio station down in my cabin so I could play anything over those radios I wanted, you know, just in case. So the next day when they came up, we had it all planned. They were going to be sleeping there. They roll out their sleeping bags on the pine needles. And, you know, you can look up through the trees and see the stars. And when the wind comes through those pine needles, you hear that ooey sound of the wind. And I thought, about right then, I will turn on my transmitter and I will play haunted house music from Disney's Haunted House. And it would be coming from all four directions. So, and then my roommate, who was the camp lifeguard, was a big guy, he would come all dressed up like the old sheep herder. And so he would bring an axe there, and they would be up there with no wood. Oh. They had learned the night before, you gotta always have firewood. So he would come up and start chopping wood for them, and I'll bet they would be prepared for the rest of their lives. Okay? So that's the plan. Now I wanna zoom in. So this is what the pine forest actually looked like when you get down inside. And there's nothing but pine needles, so it's just like a big mattress. And they'd lay their sleeping bags out on there, and you'd hear the wind going through, and it was quite an experience just being there. That's what gave me the idea. But then as it started getting dark, turned on the radio so they could hear it, and just then the lifeguard came out with his little disguise, and all these flashlights were shining on him from the kids. And he explained to me later, the lights blinded me. I couldn't see a word. All these flashlights and it was dark. And I said, so what did you do? And he said, I cut a piece of wood and then I started dragging it backwards because I didn't dare turn around because my costume was only on the front. And I backed right into a tree. And all those flashlights were on me, and I just imagined what they were thinking. So I pushed hard against the tree, and it was a branch, and I pushed the branch back further and further, so I kept going back, and then it flipped in front of me. Well, when the boys saw the old sheep herder ghost walk straight through a tree, yeah, it was a real thing. So. Can you imagine now, can you imagine what the forest was like at night? It was dark like this. Ooh. They were hearing those evil noises.
Those evil noises.
Now listen, listen. Can you hear it? No. There's the old sheep herder.
Chopping wood.
Chopping the wood. Now he's got to figure out how to get out of there and that darn tree's in the way.
Oh.
Yeah. The next morning, everybody in the camp was talking about how he walked right through a tree.
Oh, I bet they were. Their hearts were probably still
What a lesson, what a lesson. Well, Scout Camp is a place where you can learn a lot of lessons about life.
Yes.
But one of the things I liked most about camp was science. As a Cub Scout, I went to the planetarium. Mm. And that's a place where they project all of the stars on the ceiling, and you learn what all the stars are. And I loved it so much, I started going every Thursday, every week, until I memorized the whole speech. It was fun to know about all the stars. When I got up to Scout Camp and they found out I knew what all the stars were, they had me do the Wednesday night.
Wednesday night.
The Wednesday night, look at the stars. And we took the boys up to the top flats, and here they are. This is a picture of them. And you can see it's a big flat field where there are no trees, and where they could all sit around in the grass with no fire, no lights, and we could look up and see the stars. Mm. Now, what I want to do today is I want to make everybody here fall just a little bit more in love with the stars. The stars are so amazing and so beautiful. And you all need to know something about them. And I told the scouts that. You need to know a little bit about these wonderful stars. I asked them how many knew where the North Star was. And a few did, but a lot of them didn't. They said, well, you need to know how to find the North Star. How many of you know? I bet a lot of you do. You all need to. You need to be able to find them. So we're going to do a little walk through the stars, okay? Let's bring up this next one. Here is the Big Dipper. And why do we call it a Big Dipper? Because if you connect those stars together, you can see it's like a dipper. You can dip water out of a stream, okay? And the Big Dipper is one of the most easy to recognize constellations in the sky. In the summer, at a reasonable time in the evening, it's straight up, it's easy to find. And right here we go, we have two interesting stars. If you notice, this star is smaller, this one's bigger. These two here are called the pointer stars. And they're called pointers because if you follow them in a straight line, they point right to the North Star. So if you can find the Big Dipper, and you know that, you can find the North Star. Now I want to show you, the North Star is straight above the North Pole. If you go to the North Pole and look straight up, you'll see the North Star. And so as the Earth turns, it looks like the sun moves over, the moon moves over, and the stars move. But actually, it's the Earth turning. So as the Earth turns, it looks like, in slow motion, that all the stars go in a circle around the North Star. Look at this. The North Star is right here in the middle. And as it starts going around, well, here we go. Mm-hmm. Let's save the North Star for a minute. And let me show you, again, we have the Big Dipper. I want to point this out. Here are the two pointing stars, and they point up to the North Star.
Okay.
So if you can find the Big Dipper, it's pretty easy to find the North Star. The North Star isn't very bright. It isn't the brightest star by far in the sky, but it is in a northerly direction. So you can use it to know which direction to go. But now here's where it gets more interesting. If you follow the tail of the Big Dipper, the arch down, there's another big star about halfway across the sky, and that star is a star named Arcturus. Everybody should know that star and know how to find it. Just follow the Big Dipper's tail, and you get to Arcturus. And if you keep going, you get down to another bright star called Spica. And everybody needs to know where those are. So I expect after today, everyone will recognize the Big Dipper. You'll find the North Star, you'll find Arcturus and Spica. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then there's this amazing constellation. And this is something that you've got to know about. Can you recognize these three stars right here in the middle? This is called the famous Orion Belt. Orion is the name of a constellation that is the hunter, and here's his belt. And I'll show you the lines of how they've drawn the hunter, but you need to see these three stars we're going to talk about a little bit more. But up here, do you see this one? Mm-hmm. That's a star that's been getting a lot of attention, and you should be watching it. Notice it's kind of reddish compared to the other stars. It's called Betelgeuse. This is a star that is about ready to go supernova and explode. And in the last few years, it's been in the news all kinds of times because it gets dimmer, 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 brighter, brighter. It changes in brightness, and that makes people know that it's about to explode. So astronomers tell us that any minute now, this is going to explode, and it's going to be a very bright event in the sky. And it's probably going to happen within the next 100,000 years. Anytime.
Any moment
could
now.
Could happen tonight. If it happens, you'll know all about it. An interesting thing that also is kind of fun, if you go out and find Orion in the night sky, those three stars on the belt are easy to find it, and then you look up on the left side there, up high, you see the kind of reddish star, which is Betelgeuse. Different people say it different. Some people even call it Betelgeuse. Mm-hmm. That's what I always used to call it, but Betelgeuse. call it what you like, but it's a real neat constellation. This star, when you look at it, is light that has traveled through space a great distance. The light that you see today from Betelgeuse left the star and started coming towards us 2,000 years ago when Jesus was the story happening in the Bible. Just think about it. The same time he was doing that, that light was coming from the star. So Betelgeuse is gone. We just can't see it yet because it's taken the light all that time to go out. It has to travel 2,000 light years. A light year is how far light will go in 1 year. And it has to go at the speed of light for 2,000 years to get to us. So we're seeing what happened 2,000 years ago. And that's pretty neat.
It's really neat.
I just think it'd be really nice to be able to have a machine so you can go back and see what happened 2,000 years ago. I'd like to see stuff like that. I haven't figured out how to make it yet. But let's go back here. So this is the belt. And down here is Orion's sword. What are these stars? Well, this happens to be the very, very amazing, right here especially, Orion Nebula. This is the closest place to our Earth where stars are made. It's a star nursery. Stars are being born right there. And it's a very fascinating thing. Now, a lot of people can't see that when you go look at Orion because we have a lot of light pollution. One negative of the invention of the electric light bulb is there's a lot of light coming off our cities, so it's not dark enough to see these things very well. A few years ago, I was driving across America in an automobile and crossed Interstate 80, and I was near Casper, Wyoming, out in the middle of Wyoming, and it was a meteor shower night, and I saw a meteorite, so I pulled off the highway and went up by some trees and parked and watched, and the night sky was so dark, and I saw meteorites every 20 seconds. It was amazing, beautiful. And being able to see the stars, a lot of the Egyptians and the old people used to really study the stars because they could see them so well. We sometimes have to use the internet to see what they looked like from the James Webb or something, which is even better. The James Webb has made some amazing discoveries already about this Orion Nebula. And one of the things that has really baffled scientists is that the frequencies of light coming to us from that nebula are not what we expect for any element we know on Earth. And so some people have even tried to give this new element a new name because we don't know what it is. Well, when the James Webb came and we could see it so much more clearly, we're able to find out that this phantom, spooky new element was oxygen. In a very weird state in the atmosphere where you have all of the hydrogen ions that are forming the new stars. So there's wonderful discoveries going on. The belt is just really, really unique. There's a huge star cluster right here by this star in the belt. If you have binoculars or a telescope, you can look at that cluster and see it. Right here, right there by that star, is one of my favorite objects in the sky, and you can see it real good with a small telescope. It's the Horsehead Nebula. A lot of you have seen a picture. If you haven't seen it, Google it. The Horsehead Nebula, and it's beautiful, and it looks just like a horse head in the stars, and it's right there. So when you see Orion, you're seeing that. And Orion has just really thrilled people for many, many years. In fact, we're gonna go a little bit off the deep end here. You notice that this star's bright. This one's a little more dim. Can you see that? And if you look at how they're lined up, these two are lined up, but this little one's a little bit off center. Isn't that interesting? We can take a look at that. Here's how they connect. Here's the bow. Here's Betelgeuse. Here's the string. So this is Orion. But now, if we look at it this way, here are those three stars. You see these two are a little brighter, and this one is smaller. And some of these, like this one, is actually five stars. Some people think it's going to turn out being six. But notice how they're not quite in the line. Can you see that? Mm-hmm. So that one's dimmer. These are brighter. They're not in the line. Why is that so significant? Some researchers have discovered that in the exact position, with this one being a little off center, is exactly the same position as the Great Pyramids mm-hmm. in Egypt. Now, a lot of people are trying to figure out how we made those pyramids. I was the only living person that was alive back then, but I don't remember, sadly.
Well, that's sad.
Well, anyway, it's really quite interesting. And the size, the brightness of this and the lesser brightness of that are like the size of the pyramids, which really get very suspicious. So here are the Great Pyramids. See the bright one, and the dim one. And now I'm going to show you an aerial photograph of all three pyramids with the three stars placed on top of them. Look at that. So they're right in position. So a lot of people think these were done on purpose, because they had studied these stars, and many scientists believe that they thought that Orion was where the spirits went after they died. And they actually have studied these chambers and how they align with Orion. And it's interesting, they actually line up with the King's Chamber, but the stars kind of wobble a little bit in the sky because the spin of the Earth wobbles as it goes around, and they line up just about perfect today, but they wouldn't have thousands of years ago. And yet they're lined up perfect when you look through them to see how they hit these stars. They're just lined up perfectly, so you see the stars down these long chambers. And by doing calculations of that wobble of the Earth's spinning, they find out that they were lined up like they are now. They were lined up the same way 10,000 years ago. And so that's one of the reasons they think the pyramids are 10,000 years old. Now, I can't say that's all confirmed science, but it's fun to speculate, isn't it? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, now, one other thing you have to know about is the Milky Way. You see this band of stars. If you've gone out on a really dark night, you'll see the Milky Way. It'll be crisscrossing, going different places in the sky. The Milky Way is a candy bar. But that's not what we're talking about. The Milky Way is our galaxy. That's where we are in the stars. And if we could get far enough away to take a picture of the Milky Way, we could see what it looks like. But none of our probes or anything have gone nearly far enough to get outside the Milky Way. It's huge. So that's sort of what it looks like, but that's not the Milky Way. That is Andromeda, another galaxy that's quite a bit like the Milky Way. And all the probes and things we've done in our solar system don't even come close to getting out of just the Milky Way. And there are literally thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of these galaxies throughout the universe. And since we got Hubble and then we've got James Webb, we just discovered more and more and more and more. Now, I want you to look there, and let's just say this is pretty close to the Milky Way. So where are we in this galaxy? Where is the sun and our little planet going around the sun? And if you can see this magnifier glass about right there, that's where we are. About right there. See that? There's Earth. In fact, I think I can see someone waving down in Texas. So it's interesting to know a little bit about these stars. Now, since we're right in the middle of the Milky Way, we look out, and that's why we can see that band, because we're in the middle looking out, and it goes all the way around the Earth, because we're right in the middle of it.
Sweet.
And I think that's pretty neat, don't you? Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're out of time, but I just want to finish by telling you the end of the old sheepherder story. So it turns out that one of the scouts that would go to scout camp, wondering what happened to this old sheep herder and hiking off through the forest, found a tree. And he thinks that in the tree, he actually found the old sheep herder.
In the tree.
Yeah, and this is not fake. This is real. I want you to take a look at it. Here is the tree, and he's pretty sure that's the old sheep herder. Now, this picture was taken about 15 years ago. How many years ago?
About 15
years ago, and there he was.
You can see him.
And this guy, who's now one of our senior Acellus trainers, trained schools, inspired by this beautiful-looking shot, would go back and check this tree often to make sure the sheep herder was doing all right. And it got hit by lightning, and the tree fell over. And so our trainer rescued the old sheep herder, cut this piece of wood out, and brought it into his Acellus support office. And so 15 years later, it looks like this.
He has teeth.
And I hope you can see the teeth and everything there. There he is. Moral to the story, be sure to chop your wood before you go to sleep on a cold night.
Hello. Hi, guys. It's R51. I'm inside here.
No.
Hey, how many of you recognize me? Okay, gotta go.
What?
Study hard. We'll see you next time.